All right. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be doing a deep dive into Wilson v. Sider.
Okay.
And it's a case that any law student, is going to need to know inside and out. And so we're going to try and break it down.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it is.
Sure.
It's a landmark Supreme Court case about prison conditions and when those conditions are bad enough to violate the Eighth Amendment.
Right. And the whole thing is about cruel and unusual punishment, right? I mean, that's the Eighth Amendment. And so what we're trying to figure out is, like, you've got this idea of cruel and unusual. Does that require like a certain mental state from like the guards or the warden or whoever is in charge of the prison? Like, how does that actually work?
Exactly. So that's kind of the big question that we're going to be looking at today. Wilson v. Sider is really important for figuring that out. So why don't we start with just a quick overview of like the facts of the case, how it ended up at the Supreme Court.
Sounds good.
So this case starts with a guy named Perley Wilson, and he's an inmate at the Hocking Correctional Facility in Ohio. And he sues these two prison officials, Richard Sider and Carl Humphreys.
Gotcha.
And he sues them under Section 1983,
Okay.
which
Okay.
our listeners out
Yeah.
there, that lets you sue state officials when you think they violated your constitutional rights.
Exactly.
So Wilson, in his complaint, he doesn't just like, say, oh, this place is a dump.
Right.
He's really specific about the conditions that he's complaining about.
Okay.
So what are some of the things he's upset about?
So he lists a bunch of things. Overcrowding was a big one. Like the prison was super crowded.
Yeah, that's a common complaint.
Yeah. And then also like just a lot of noise, like constantly excessive noise. And then he also complains about, not enough space in his locker. Like just these kind of
Totally.
daily life things.
Just basic stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine it gets pretty intense when you're in a situation where you can't even like
Oh, yeah.
control the noise level,
Of
right? You're just
course.
subjected to all this racket all the time.
And it goes beyond that too. Like he's talking about like heating and cooling not being adequate,
Yeah.
the ventilation being bad. Like imagine a prison that's overcrowded and also like stuffy.
Right,
It
yeah.
doesn't have good
Yeah,
airflow.
it sounds pretty unbearable.
Yeah, and then even like restrooms that were filthy and dining facilities that weren't sanitary. So like
Right.
it gets pretty bad.
Yeah, that's going way beyond just like, minor
Yeah.
discomfort. That's like a health hazard.
Totally a health hazard.
Yeah.
And then he also mentioned being housed with inmates who had mental illnesses. And so you can imagine, like, that's a whole
Right.
another layer of complexity in terms of the safety and the environment there.
Yeah, and it's not just about him. Like, I imagine if you're in an environment where you don't feel safe,
Right.
that's going to impact you mentally and physically.
Totally. And, he's not messing around with this lawsuit. He asks for what's called declaratory relief, which basically means he wants the court to say, yep, these conditions are unconstitutional. And then he also wants injunctive relief. So that means he wants the court to force the prison officials to actually fix things. Like, you got to do something about this.
We could change.
And then on top of that, he's asking for $900,000 in damages,
Wow.
which is, a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a big statement.
So clearly he feels like this is serious stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So, he files this suit. The prison officials, they don't just, roll over.
Right.
They both file what are called cross motions for summary judgment.
Yeah.
And that basically means each side is saying, hey, judge,
Yeah.
there's no dispute about the fact here. You can just decide this case based on the law.
Right, based on the law.
So it comes down to like, what's the legal standard?
Exactly.
So to support their arguments, both sides submit these affidavits, which are like sworn statements
Right.
about what happened.
Yeah. So Wilson is describing all these bad conditions in his affidavits.
Right.
And he's saying that the prison officials knew about it and didn't do anything.
Yeah, and I imagine the prison officials are saying something different in their affidavits.
Of course. So they're saying, well, some of these things aren't even true,
Yeah.
or they're not as bad as Wilson says. And for some of the other things, they're like, yeah, we're working on it.
Right. They're trying to make it seem like
We've got plans.
they're doing their
We're
best.
doing our best, exactly.
So you've got this kind of clash of, he said, she said,
Totally.
and that's part of what the court has to sort out. So it's important to understand the legal landscape at the time, right?
Right.
Like what was going on with Eighth Amendment law before this case even got to the Supreme Court?
Totally,
Second
because
half.
this was not like a super clear area of law.
Right.
So you have the Eighth Amendment, which says no cruel and unusual punishment. But like, what does that actually mean in practice? especially when it comes to like the everyday conditions of prison.
Yeah.
So there were a couple of key cases before Wilson that kind of set the stage.
Okay.
One is Estelle v. Gamble from 1976, and that case was about medical care in prisons.
Okay. So that's a specific type of condition.
Exactly. And in that case, the Supreme Court said that for medical care claims, the standard is deliberate indifference.
Okay. And just to remind our listener,
yeah,
deliberate indifference means that, like, the prison officials knew about a serious risk to the inmate's health.
Right.
And they just chose to ignore it.
Exactly. It's more than just like, oops, we made a mistake.
Right.
It's like they knew and they didn't care.
Yeah. They were deliberately indifferent.
Exactly.
So that was for medical care.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have this other case, Whitley v. Albers, and that was in 1986.
Okay.
And that was about, like, use of force during a prison riot.
Okay, totally different situation.
Totally different. And in that case, the court used a way higher standard.
Yeah.
Like, they called it malicious and sadistic.
Wow.
So it had to be, like, the guards were intentionally trying to hurt the inmates.
Okay, so you have these two very different situations and two very different standards.
Exactly.
And so then the question becomes, like, what about all the other stuff?
Yeah, like, where do general prison conditions fit in?
Right, like, is it more like the medical care situation, or is it more like a riot?
Yeah.
And the lower courts were all over the place.
Yeah, makes sense,
They couldn't agree on what standard to use.
And that's what we call a circuit split, right?
Exactly. Different courts are applying the law differently.
So in Wilson's case, the Sixth Circuit actually used an even higher standard than deliberate indifference.
Really?
They said it had to be persistent, malicious cruelty.
Wow. So even worse than just deliberate indifference.
Yeah, like they really wanted to make it hard for inmates to win these cases.
It sounds like it.
And that's exactly why the Supreme Court took the Wilson case.
Okay.
They wanted to clear up this confusion about what the right standard should be.
Makes sense.
So Justice Scalia, he wrote the majority opinion in Wilson.
Okay.
And his big argument was all about the word punishment in the Eighth Amendment.
Okay, interesting.
He said because the Eighth Amendment prohibits cruel and unusual punishment to prove a violation, you have to show that the state actually intended to punish the inmate with those bad conditions.
Okay, so it's not enough that the conditions are just bad.
Right. It's not enough that it's like an objectively bad situation.
Right.
You have to show that the state was like, yes, we are doing this to punish you.
That makes sense.
So for Scalia, if the conditions are bad because of, like, budget problems or just negligence, that doesn't automatically mean it's an Eighth Amendment violation.
Interesting. So he's drawing a line between, like, intentional punishment and just, like, things being bad because of other reasons.
Exactly. Right? So he gives two main reasons for this.
Yeah.
The first is, like, a textualism argument.
Okay. I'm familiar with textualism.
Yeah. So basically he's saying we have to look at the plain meaning of the words in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And he's arguing that the word punishment itself implies intent.
Okay.
Like you're punishing someone on purpose.
Right. You're doing it deliberately.
Exactly.
Okay. I see that.
So, for example, if the heating in the prison is bad.
Yeah.
But it's because the legislature didn't give the prison enough money to fix it.
Right.
For Scalia, that's not necessarily punishment in the constitutional sense.
Okay, so it's more about like who's responsible and what their intent was.
Exactly.
Okay.
His second reason is based on precedent.
Okay.
So he's saying, look, we already have this standard of deliberate indifference.
Right, from Estelle v. Gamble.
Exactly.
Medical care case.
And he's basically saying that standard should apply to all Eighth Amendment cases.
Okay, so he's trying to create like a consistent rule
across
the board.
Instead of having all these different standards.
Yeah, that makes sense from like a legal perspective.
Right, it makes things more predictable.
Totally.
So that leads to the famous two-part test that comes out of Wilson.
Right, the two prongs.
Yeah. So can you walk us through those prongs?
Sure. So the first prong is what's called the objective component.
Okay.
And this is where the inmate has to show that the conditions were sufficiently serious.
Okay. So like how bad do things have to be?
Right. Like are we talking about just like minor inconveniences or are we talking about like really serious deprivation?
Yeah.
So they have to show that there's like an extreme deprivation of basic human needs.
Okay, so give us some examples of what that might look like.
Sure. So think about things like food, shelter, sanitation, medical care, protection from harm.
Right, the essentials.
Yeah, the essentials. Yeah. And it can't just be like, oh, the food is bland.
Right.
It has to be like, I'm not getting enough food to survive.
Yeah, or like the conditions are so unsanitary that people are getting sick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There has to be a real risk to the inmate's health or well-being.
Gotcha. So that's the objective component. Then you've got the subjective component.
Yep.
And that goes back to the mental state of The prison officials.
Exactly. So this is where the inmate has to prove deliberate indifference.
Okay.
And that means showing that the officials knew about the risk.
Right.
And they disregarded it.
They didn't care.
Yeah. They knew it was dangerous and they were like, eh, whatever.
So it's not enough to show that, like, a reasonable person would have known.
Right. It has to be that these specific officials actually knew.
Yeah.
And they made the choice to ignore it.
So let's say, for example, you have a prison cell.
Yeah.
And the toilet's constantly overflowing.
Okay.
That's pretty bad, right?
That's gross. Yeah.
That could potentially be like a sufficiently serious condition.
Yeah. It could meet the objective prong.
But to meet the subjective prong, the inmate would have to show that they told the guards about it.
Right.
And the guards did nothing.
Exactly. They knew it was a problem and they didn't fix it.
Yeah.
So that's how the two prongs work together.
So the whole point of this two-part test is to protect prison officials from being sued for, like, just making a mistake.
Exactly. Like, simple negligence.
Right.
It's not enough to be like, oh, we should have known better.
Yeah. You have to show that they actually knew and they didn't care.
They made a conscious choice.
So this is where Justice White comes in.
Right. Justice White had some thoughts.
Yeah, so he wrote a concurring opinion in Wilson.
Okay.
And he agreed with the outcome of the case. Like, he agreed that it should be sent back to the lower court.
Mm-hmm.
But he really disagreed with Scalia's emphasis on intent.
Okay, so he had a problem with that subjective component.
Yeah, he was worried that it would create this loophole.
Okay.
Where states could just be like, oh, well, we didn't mean to do it.
Right, like we didn't have the right intent.
Exactly. So even if the conditions were horrible.
Yeah.
If they could argue that it was due to, like, underfunding or bureaucracy, they wouldn't be liable.
So he's basically saying, like, the state should be responsible for ensuring that the conditions are humane.
Right. Regardless of, like, the specific intent of individual officials.
Exactly. He thought the focus should be on the conditions themselves.
Yeah. And he has this really powerful quote where he says, if a state imposes imprisonment as punishment, it must ensure the conditions comply with the Eighth Amendment.
Yeah. That's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah. He's basically saying, like, you can't just lock people up and then be like, well, sorry, it's a mess in here.
Right. The state has a duty to provide humane conditions.
Exactly.
So what did Scalia say to that?
Well, Scalia's response was basically that federal courts shouldn't be micromanaging prisons.
Okay, so he's worried about, like, federal overreach.
Right. He's saying it's not the court's job to tell prisons how to run things.
Right.
And this debate is still going on today.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, we see all these stories about prisons that are overcrowded and understaffed.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions are just awful.
Right.
And the question is, does the Wilson standard make it harder for inmates to challenge those conditions?
Yeah, because now they have to prove that the officials knew about the problems and didn't care, which can be really tough to do, especially if the problems are due to, like, systemic issues.
Yeah.
Like, the prison just doesn't have enough money or staff.
So what's happened since Wilson? Like, how has it been applied in the courts?
Well, since Wilson, the lower courts have really focused on that subjective component.
Okay.
They want to see strong evidence that the officials had actual knowledge of the risk.
Right.
And then the Supreme Court kind of doubled down on that in Farmer v. Brennan.
Okay. And that case was in 1994.
Right. A few years after Wilson.
And what did Farmer v. Brennan say?
It basically said that deliberate indifference requires actual awareness of the risk.
Okay, so it's not enough to show that they should have known.
Right. It has to be that they actually knew.
And obviously that's led to a lot of criticism.
Totally.
People say it creates this catch-22.
Yeah.
Where inmates need to prove what the officials knew, but they don't have access to the information they need to prove it.
Right. They're kind of stuck.
Yeah. But the other side argues that you need that subjective component to prevent frivolous lawsuits.
Right, because otherwise anyone could sue over any little thing.
So Wilson v. Sider, it's been hugely influential in prison law.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's really shaped how we think about Eighth Amendment challenges to prison conditions.
It's a landmark case.
So for our listener who's studying to be a lawyer, the big takeaway here is that proving bad conditions is not enough.
Right.
You also have to prove that the officials responsible were deliberately indifferent.
That they knew and didn't care.
And that's a tough standard to meet.
It is.
So it's a really important thing to keep in mind as you're learning about these kinds of cases.
Definitely.
And it leaves us with a lot to think about, right?
Yeah.
Like, if it's so hard to prove deliberate indifference, are there other ways to ensure that prisons are humane?
Right. Like, are there other legal or policy approaches?
Exactly. Like, how do we balance the rights of inmates with the practical challenges of running a prison?
That's a tough question.
It is a tough question.
Yeah. And Wilson v. Sider is right at the heart of that debate.
Absolutely. So for all our listeners out there, keep thinking about these issues.
Yeah.
It's not easy stuff, but it's important.
It is.
All right. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Wilson v. Sider.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.
See ya.